Canadian flags are up because of the General Assembly. And I just want you to have in mind that this we're learning this morning for Refuah Shleima for Helen Bas Bela. No. And for Liba Miriam Bas Bela. All right, Refuah Shleima. And I'll tell you, we have to pray for Yeshua's for all of Klal Yisrael. We're in very sad shape. Yeshua's for Nechama. So I started by saying that the study of Chumash can be very exhilarating, and I'm talking about Sefer Bereishis in particular. It can also be extremely dangerous. It's fraught with many pitfalls, especially since everybody feels that they can learn a Pasuk Chumash, and especially in Bereishis. Stories, everybody has their interpretation of stories, and then so many people have to make up speeches for bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvah and sheva brachas and who knows what else, all sorts of events, and then week by week they of course take a look into the parashat HaShavua. And over the years I've heard all sorts of things that have really upset me no end. So really the purpose of this morning's shiur is we have to tread very lightly. We have to move very delicately in Sefer Bereishis. We can't look at anything superficially, and we certainly can't trust ourselves to truly understand what motivates the personalities in Sefer Bereishis. Listen, I can't figure out Binyamin Netanyahu and Arik Sharon. Yeah, I'm going to be able to figure out Yitzchak and Rivka and Yaakov and Esav. A little humility. A little humility. And especially when we come to the Ovos and the Imahos, we cannot and dare not look at them through our own eyes of flesh and blood, boss of Adam, because we can make terrible, terrible mistakes. And I say, I've heard all sorts of things over the years. You see, it's not only... Truth is, I shouldn't have said only people who have to make speeches at bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs, etc. I mean, there are about 3,000 rabbis in the United States of America that have to churn out a drosha every week. I mean, and churning out the drosha, so you know, it always depends to a great extent the mood in which you find yourself, and you can end up making all sorts of interpretations that are so far from the truth. So I say you have to proceed with caution. One of the parashiyot in Bereishit that requires more caution than any other, and I think it should come with a label on it, this parasha can be dangerous to your spiritual health if you don't understand what's going on over here. Yitzchak wants to give the brachas to Esav. So what do we have over here? You read the parasha, and you're left with the impression, Yitzchak, I mean, whatever I say now, I'm saying it with tongue-in-cheek, sort of. Yitzchak is obviously either at the point of senility or has passed it already. He doesn't know who this fellow Esav is. I mean, we all know who Esav is. And Yitzchak, who's been living with him all of these years, you know, he doesn't know him, and we can explain it psychologically. Everybody is an armchair psychologist, just like everybody's a rabbi. Everybody is a shtickle psychologist. I could make a case that Yitzchak is living in denial. How does that like? I know nothing about psychology. But Yitzchak is living in denial. He has a son who's a Roshim of Roshim. He's a killer. So how does he deal with it? Or should he denies it. He lives Ashlaya. That's one of the words that's used lately. Ashlaya. I was at the... illusion, right. Living with an illusion. Not living the truth. Living the Ashlaya. I'm a member of the 1,000 strong Merkaz of Mavdal, and I was there on Sunday, and I lost. Everybody was talking about everybody else's position, that it's an ashlaya, it's an illusion. So here I can give a whole shiur and a whole drasha this coming Shabbos on Yitzchak Avinu, Yitzchak Avinu lived an illusion. He had to. He couldn't come face to face with the fact that he had failed with regard to Esav, and therefore he lives the illusion. And he's treating him like he's a tzaddik. You know, I just thought of that now, by the way. I just came up with this pshat now. So that's real instant psychological deep insight into Yitzchak, and it's all wrong. We're of course going to have the problem of how do we deal with Rivka. So I know already, I know what's going to go on in everybody's mind. First of all, as far as Rivka is concerned, she deceives her husband. She deceives her husband. And then, of course, anybody who wants to is going to come up with a whole explanation of the fact that they're simply unable to communicate with one another. Because they're going to ask the question, why doesn't Rivka go over to them and say, Yitzhak, you know, we've been through a lot over all of these years. You know, you've been making a terrible mistake all of your life. You want to give your brachas to Esav? I mean, you're kidding me. What a terrible mistake this is. Why doesn't she talk to him? Well, obviously, there must be some ketzer batik shoret. How do you say that in English? Ketzer batik shoret? There's something better, some better word than that. A short circuit in the communication, that's right. Rivka can't communicate. I remember a rabbi who was, I'd say he's an important name, who gave a drasha once, goes back many years. I hope he changed his mind since then. Difficult for me to say it, but I'm going to say it only to point out the extent that even rabbis can make terrible mistakes. Yaakov Avinu was a mama's boy. His mother tells him to go ahead and deceive father Yitzchak. Then Yaakov Avinu can't stand up to his mother, and therefore he just, whatever mama tells him, Yaakov is going to do. The fact is, the only good drasha you can make if you look at the parsha superficially is, there's one hero in the parsha, Rav Esav. He doesn't deceive anybody. Esav is the only one who ends up crying at the end of the parsha. Tata Laban, don't you have a bracha left for me? The heart's can raise gain, you understand? The heart can go out there. He's going to cry, Barcheni Gamani Avi. You know, and you look at the parsha superficially, you can end up with such terrible, terrible mistakes. Now, I admit that it is a very difficult parsha to understand. But there are all sorts of possibilities over here in studying the parsha. Could have taken a number of the Mefarshim and compared their approaches. And by the way, the approaches of all the Mefarshim, none of them reflect anything that we were saying up until now. Everything we said up until now was all wrong. So we're going to have to see what indeed is happening in the parasha, and not only what is happening, how do the Mefarshim know it? But I'm really going to focus on one. I'm going to focus on one, because to try and take the Ksava HaKabbalah and the Malbim and the Abarbanel and the Ramban and compare and contrast, and there are differences between them, is just going to be too heavy. If we can make our way through a few psukim in one of the Mefarshim, that's what you have in front of you, the Ksava HaKabbalah, and it looks formidable, I know you can do it. I know you can do it. First, let's read a few of the Chumash, the psukim in Chumash. Yeah? Rhoda would like a little bit background on the Ksav HaKabbalah. I can only give you a brief outline of the Ksav HaKabbalah. His name was Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg. He was Rav in Königsberg, and we're talking about the last century. The Sefer most probably was published for the first time in the middle of the last century. I take a guess at this moment. I mean, if I would have known, I should have known that you were going to ask that question. I would have prepared a whole biography. Mir Hashem will do that too. But I can tell you that it was the middle of the last century that it was published. We're talking about 150 years ago at least. And he and the Malbim and the Torah Tumima, the Malbim was being published at the same time, a little bit afterwards, Torah Tumima Chumash were published in this century, maybe toward the very, no, I think, very end of the last century, beginning of this century. All three had one goal and objective in mind. Their goal and their objective was to protect Torah from the onslaught of the Reform movement, the onslaught of the age of humanism, Darwinism, because what, and wait a minute, and of course Wellhausen and the school of higher and lower biblical criticism. That really began yet in the century before, at the end of the 18th century. And what that all about was, I'll give you a brief review of it all. There were scholars in France that were dealing with Homer, the Iliad and the Odyssey, and what developed was that it wasn't all written at one time by one author, but rather it was written over a much longer period of time over a number of authors, and ultimately it was put together by an editor. Along came people in the field of Bible study, both Jews and non-Jews alike, and they took all of the methodology that had been used with regard to the Iliad and the Odyssey of Homer, and they simply transferred it to Torah. Because there was an agenda that they had. The agenda, of course, was the idea that Torah was given at Sinai by God at one time to the Jewish people was something that they had to battle with and remove from Jewish consciousness. Why? Because if it's given by God in an act of great revelation to his people, then of course it remains valid for all time and into eternity. Oh, but what happens if you can take Torah and say, well, this developed over a long period of time. It's man-made. There was an editor after 1,000 or 1,500 years who took and stitched together, made a patchwork of all sorts of documents that were available in ancient Palestine, you understand, in the north and in the south and here and there. And ultimately, some man put it all together, and that's how we have the Bible. But it's not divine. It wasn't given by God. It's a piece of literature, albeit, yes, a piece of maybe magnificent literature, but it's man-made. Do you understand the ramifications of something of that sort? Then nothing is binding anymore. Nothing is binding. This was the agenda. This was an agenda of the Reform movement, of biblical criticism. And they began to find all sorts of ways and means of tearing Torah into pieces. One of them was the most famous, most probably, was the documentary hypothesis. What's the documentary hypothesis? There are places in Torah where God is referred to as Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. There are places in Torah where God is called Elohim. There are places in Torah where God is called Hashem Elohim. So you should know these were different sources. There was some writer who used Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. There was another one who used Elohim. There was another one who used Hashem Elohim. And at some later stage in history, some unknown editor went and put all of these pieces together. And he created a Torah. This was biblical criticism. Had absolutely no idea that there are different meanings to Yud-Kei Vav-Kei and Elohim and Hashem Elohim and every place where it says in all of Tanakh Kula from beginning to end in all 25 books makes every place Torah's precision is awesome. When the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei was necessary, that's exactly what God wrote. Where Elohim was necessary, that was God wrote. By the way, all of the shurim that we've been saying, we have been focusing on the precision of words in Torah. It's divine. Every word is heavy and laden with meaning. And I've always said, let the Torah, let the Pasuk talk to you. Don't impose yourself on the Pasuk. Don't impose yourself on Torah. For that matter, don't commit an act of violence against Torah. And it was this act of violence, the Reform movement, biblical criticism, And it's still taught today in Hebrew University and who knows how many other universities, even though it has all already been really discredited completely. And that we can talk about in future weeks. But what it created was a literature of Torah that came to the defense of the validity, the sanctity, and the eternity of Torah. One, I think the first sefer of all was Haktab and HaKabbalah. Because you see, what was at stake over here was the following. If Torah is not divine, Chas v'Shalom, if Torah is not divine, that's the Torah Shebichtav, the written Torah, then of course the oral law, the Talmud that came afterwards, is the work of men, rabbis. Fine. Now they were rabbis, and we're rabbis. We also have an opinion. What they rejected, therefore, was what we believe, be'emunah shleimah, with perfect faith, that when God gave Torah at Sinai, not only did He give the written words of Torah, He also gave the explanation of Torah, the oral law. The oral law, in the main, is not the creation of man. You see, there are so many psukim in Torah that cannot be understood without the oral law. And therefore, of necessity, an oral law had to be given together with the written law. And the examples are so many. It says in Torah, for example, when you eat, v'zavarto, you shall slaughter. Can you please tell me what the zavarto means? Do you know which Torah there is on the zavarto? All the laws of shechita and nikur and kashrus and who knows what doesn't appear in Torah. So what do you think when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain and he said Nizavarda? So everybody took notes and they wrote Nizavarda. Yeah. Or what do you think Moshe Rabbeinu waited until somebody in the back said Moshe Laban, what's Nizavarda all about? What does it mean? No, he came down and he explained to them the whole area of the laws of shechita or another one. You should bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be frontlets between your eyes. The mitzvah of tefillin. So what? He didn't explain to them what it means. Of course, he explained to them what he meant. What are you talking about? What should we do, Revelation? What should we do? It means the following: Torah Shebichtav, the written law, could never be understood without the oral law that came hand in hand with it. Both Torah Shebichtav and Torah Sheba'al Peh, the written and the oral law, were given at Sinai. One of the ways by which oral law is referred to in Talmud is Kabbalah. I want you not to make a terrible mistake here. The word Kabbalah today has come to mean Jewish mysticism. That's not the original meaning. The original meaning of Kabbalah is Moshe kibel Torah miSinai uMisoro Yeshua. Moshe received Torah at Sinai and he transmitted it to all the rest of the generations. Which means the word Kabbalah means that which we have received from previous generations. Call along came Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg and he wrote a sefer called Haktav v'Hakabbalah. Haktav, the written Torah. VaHaKabbalah and the oral Torah both go together. There is nothing that separates them. Oral law is not something that was imposed by the rabbis upon the words of Torah. Torah was given that way to us. Ketav VaHaKabbalah. And he's going to show how our soul, all the halachot of Torah, all the halachot of the oral law are based in the pasuk. If you just want to let the pasuk talk to you. If you want to do violence to a pasuk, then you create. You create all sorts of nonsense. The same thing, of course, was done by the Torah Tamima. Torah, it's a complete Torah. What does the Torah Tamima do? He has the text of Torah at the top of the page. He has the text of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, at the bottom of the page. And he shows how the Ketav and the Kabbalah, Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav, perfect. How did it say? Bull? Perfect match. The Malbim did the same thing. All of them all of them had their purpose to show that Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh are both from Sinai, and they blend harmoniously with one another. The Malbim, of course, because of the brilliance of his sefer, he was what the greatest, how do you say that? He was arch foe of the reform movement. They caused him trouble wherever he went. And he had to move. I don't know how he wrote such a brilliant perush on all of Tanakh. All three of them were Gaonim Atzilim. Three major svarim that really reflect the defense of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh before the onslaught of the all sorts of forces in the world that wanted to deify, remove the divine from Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. That's the Ketav HaKabbalah, Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, approximately the year 1850, but I'll check the precise dates. I think that the Parshat Toldos should be learned for a period of a few months. Let's take a look at a few of the psukim here, just a few psukim. Chapter 27. Chapter 27. Now in chapter 27, I think that over here, most quite fascinatingly, the chapter division may very well cause us problems in understanding the parasha, and I hope I'll remember to get back to that in a little while. Otherwise, Rodo or somebody will put me back on the straight and narrow. Let's learn the first few psukim of chapter 27. By Yehi Kizak and Yitzchak, and it came to pass when Yitzchak grew old, Bapichena Einav made a oath, and his eyes had become darkened from seeing. By Yikra at Esav, Beno Hagadol, he called Esav his older son. By Yomer Elav, Beni, he said to my son. By Yomer Elav, and Esav said to him, Hineni, I'm here. Doesn't that sound great? You know, just like God appears to have gone, Hineni, okay? By Yomer, and he said, Yitzchak said, Hineni knows a country, behold, I've grown old. Like a dati yom moti, I don't know the day of my death. Viata and now, sono chelecha, please carry, take your implements, tel yecha v'kashtecha. Tel yecha means that which hangs on you. It can be one of two things, either a sword or the quiver that holds his bows. Take tel yecha v'kashtecha and your bow, v'tzei hasade, and go out into the field, v'tzudoli tzoyed, and hunt for me, hunt. Now I know, of course, that the word tzoyed over there is spelled with an extra hay. It's red tzoyed, but there's an extra hay, also meaningful and significant. We'll get back to it. Vaseli matanim, and make for me delicacies, kasher ahavti, as I always love, v'hovioli, and bring it to me, v'ochela, and I will eat. Da'avur, in order to varechachon, now she betechem amut, that my soul should bless you before I die. V'rivka shomat, v'taber Yitzchak al Esav b'no, and Rivka is listening when Yitzchak spoke to his son Esav. Now, the word shomat is also very fascinating. Really, the digduk here should have been, and Rivka heard. Shomat. Rivka shomat means she listens. Now I didn't want to use the word eavesdropping. I just said, and she heard. I have a feeling that the word Rivka shomat means she is always listening in to the conversations between Yitzchak and Esav. She always wants to know how that relationship is going. No. She wants to know, and it's not eavesdropping. That you'll have to let me prove till by a quarter after 10. Vayelech Esav Hatzada, Esav went to the field, Lotzut Sayed Lahavin, to hunt for game. Game, Lahavin. I dislike that word. I just dislike that word. Before we went to South Africa, before Yontif, and we were going to go to Kruger Park, so South African told me that you have to be there at 6 o'clock in the morning to see the game. To see the game. I think, of course, that the word comes from the fact that hunting and killing in the non-Jewish world was always a game. A game. There is a thing, huh? That's matamim. Yeah, that's for matamim. He's translating matamim, not the... Then I'm telling you that the correct translation for tzayid is game. There's a famous tshuva, somebody with the name of Gimple something or other, I think he sent it to the Noda Behuda. It's years that I've seen this tshuva. He asked the Noda Behuda if he's permitted to go out and hunt. I mean, what do you think nobles and Pulitzers and all of the rest, what do you think they were doing? They went out for the hunt, the chase, tally-ho, you know? So it's a classic tshuva of 200 years ago, where he said that there's a prohibition of tzar balachayim, you're not permitted to cause pain to living beings. However, when are you permitted? When are you permitted? If you benefit from it. In other words, strictly speaking, from the point of view of the halacha, if for example, by doing all sorts of things to animals, you can find medicine or animal experimentation is permitted, because the halacha is tzar balachayim, just to cause tzar, stam to a balachai, to a living being, is prohibited. So the Noda Behuda, wait, don't jump. No, the Buddha says, you say that by going out to hunt you enjoy and you have benefit from it. So strictly speaking, from the point of view of halacha, if it's for your man's benefit and enjoyment, you're allowed to go on. And then he says, but who's the Jew that can enjoy, that have an enjoyment from hunting? And he says, take a look. Who are the hunters? Who are the hunters in Torah? So you have a Nimrod who was a hunter, you have an Esav who was a hunter, and you have a Lemech who went out hunting, and a Gehargit mentioned in the course of his hunting. This is of course the company that you wish to keep. There are subtle messages that Torah tells us. So basically the message of the Noda Behuda was, you know, hunting is not a Jewish thing to do. Alright, anyway. And Rivka, strictly speaking, what does Amra mean? How would you translate Amra in English? No? Had said. Now this is also very fascinating. You know what it should have said over here? It should have said over here, Vatomer Rivka. And Rivka said, why, what does it mean? What's the difference between Vatomer Rivka and Rivka Amra? Both are past, but one is a simple past, and Rivka said. Or the Rivka Amra means, and Rivka had said. We have pointed out the difference between these two on a number of occasions, and of all things, now I am reminded that the most classic place of it all is right here in this Sedra. And there's another parsha that if you don't know Pshat in the parsha, you don't know how to read it, you can come out with the worst mistakes of all. And we said it some years ago in our explanation of this kind of a structure. At the beginning of the Sedra, we have the story of Esav coming running in from the field. He's exhausted. He's gebet. He's gedart. He's gemitchet. He's famished. He's starving. He says, I'm dying. And there is his brother who's cooking a nezid adashim, the red lentils over there. And Esav asks him, give me from that red stuff. You know, stuff me with that red stuff. And then you start reading the psukim, and if you don't know how to read the psukim, you can make a mistake that's as bad as the mistake that you make here if you don't know how to read these psukim. He says, and sell me your birthright. Esau says, what do you mean sell me the birthright? I'm going to die. Who needs a birthright? I need food. Give me food. And Yaakov tells him, no, I want you to sell it to me today. I want it typed up in quadruplicate, and I want your chotamet, you understand, your stamp, and we need a stapler to put them all together. We need it notarized, and after we have all of that, I'll give you tea. And Esav is like, "Ich starre weg für ihn, I'm dying." And we get this picture of Yaakov, heartless. The Jew who's Jewing Esav out of his birthright. Until finally, you can imagine already, Esav stopped for him. He's already signed all four copies. And those probably like they do over here. Wait, over here. I want you to initial. You have to initial 27 times on each one of the pages. You understand? And then he gives him to eat. Take a look back at the beginning of the sentence just for one moment. That's it. We said it before. Beginning of the parasha, chapter 25. Pasuk 32. I'm going to die. What do I need the birthright for? Yaakov said, "He shoveled. Swear to me, Kayol, I want this to be a real solid deal. I don't want you to go backing out on it afterwards." By Yishavalo, he swore to him. By Yinker of the Charoso to Yaakov, and he sold his birthright to Yaakov. Pasuk 34. Either you know how to read Pasuk 34. And then everything becomes clear, but you don't know how to read it. It says, "V'Yaakov Natan LeEsav Lechem UNizid Adashim." And Yaakov had given to Esav bread and lentils. If it would mean that Yaakov is now giving, after he has signed, and after he has put his seal, and after he has initialed, if only then he gave him to eat, then it should have said Vayitain Yaakov. That's the simple past. And he, or the simple past, that was just happening afterwards. But it says V'Yaakov Natan. Anybody who knows how to read Biblical Hebrew comes to the pasuk V'Yaakov Natan. You know what that means? Before all of the negotiations began, Yaakov had already been given him not only Nizid Adashim, he gave him bread, he gave him something to drink, he gave him a napkin, he gave him everything he needed. The whole story is different. Here also we have the same phenomenon. V'rivka Amra Yaakov v'noh lemar. I have a feeling that Rivka, looking out for the well-being of Yaakov, concerned about the deceit of Esav, also very concerned that Yitzchak should do the right thing, is always communicating to Yaakov what has taken place between Yitzchak and Esav. Rivka Amar, she had said it before and she's saying it again now. And that was another one of those instances where Yaakov has to know what's going on. And we're going to see there's no deceit. There is absolutely no deceit over here. There's no deceit and there's no fear on Rivka's part to communicate with Yitzchak. All of that just doesn't apply. Doesn't apply. So we're going to have to get to the story. Just another few seconds. V'rivka Amar Yaakov Benoi, Rivka said to her son Yaakov Lemar, I heard your father speak to your brother Esav, saying, "Bring me game, and make for me the venison, and I will eat, and I will bless you before God before I die. And now, my son, listen to me, that which I command you." She begins by commanding him. Lechno Hatzong, please go to the sheep to Kachlin Yishom and take for me from there Shnei Gedoyah, using two goats, totem, good ones,
ve'esel tamat tamim la'avicha kasher ahitam, I will make them for this venison for your father as he loves. Ve'hiveita la'avicha v'achal, and you will bring it to your father and he will eat. Ba'avur asher yivarech v'hosnei matos, so that he should bless you before his death. Ve'yom Yaakov v'rivka ima, Yaakov said to his mother Rivka, hein esav achi ish sa'ir, v'anochi ish halak, my brother Esav is hairy, and I am chalak, glat. Glat. No hair. Ulayim sheni avi. This is so fascinating. Maybe my father will touch me. Vayiti ve'enav k'met hapeh, and I will be like somebody who is deceiving him or making fun of him. Ve'evet. The Hebeiti Alai Kwalan, I will bring upon myself curse below Bracha, not Bracha. Atom Elohimos, his mother said to him, Alai Kilulat Chabani, your curse is upon me, Achshma Bekoli Valeich Kachli. Listen to my voice, I'll take the Kwalan. You listen to my voice and go take it. Vayelech, Vayikach, Vayop Elohimo. He went, he took, and he brought to his mother. How many verbs do we have over there? One, two, three verbs in a row. Three verbs in a row, but there's something missing over there. Something missing. And then the Mefarshim and Chazal say, here is one of those places where what does Yaakov have to be afraid of right now? You know what he has to be afraid of? That he may bump into Esav. I mean, he's got to move with speed, with alacrity. And the Torah knows exactly how to say that. When the Malachim come to the house of Avram, Vayemaher, Vayorot, he runs, Mari, and he tells his wife, Mari, hurry, make three saw of a flour. Rivka, this mama over here, he's a son of this mama. When Eliezer comes to the well in last week's Sedra, and he asks this girl, give me to drink, Vatemaher, Vatorot, she hurries, she runs, but to my hair, she pours, but to my hair. If we would be Yaakov, do you know what we would do over here? Move with speed. And it says three verbs. Vayelech, vayikach, vayovei. He went, he took, and he brought. Do you know what impression they leave? Somebody who's moving, as Chazal says, they describe it with three words. Onus, kofuf, boche. Onus, he's going because he's coerced. The mama says, he's caught, of course, in the in an impossible situation for a son. On the one hand, he has kibud aim, and on the other hand, he may be deceiving his father. He's caught in an impossible situation. But I'll tell you how he hopes to get out of the impossible situation. And also, just a word. And by the way, we haven't gotten to the Ksav HaKabbalah yet. There are four pages of it. This is going to be a disaster today. But all right, it'll be a blessed disaster. But Onos, he is forced. Kofut, he's bent. Uboche, and crying. That's how Chazal read this pasuk. And how? Where did they read it? Because for something where one verb should have been enough, you know what he could have said? Vayovei le'imo, he brought to his mother. I don't have the imagination to figure out that in order for him to bring it, as his mother told him, lech la el hatzon in pasuk 9, she said, go to the shefa. Where do you think he brought it from? From the kitchen. He went over to the cabinet and he took two goats out. From the fridge. From the fridge. Yeah, chalak, from the fridge. That's right. What? What might happen? The pasuk could have said, Vayavei. So how did Chazal read it? You have to know how Chazal read a pasuk. Not how amateurs and novices read a pasuk. Three verbs without the word to hurry and to run, which is exactly what he should have been doing. He has to get in there before Esav. This Esav is a master hunter. He's going to go out there into the field and he's going to give a hunt and a tzareis and a schlep and a dreng. I mean, this is a man who moves. he's not sedentary like Yaakov, who's the Ishtam Yoshev Oholim, lives in the tents. He most probably hasn't done stretching or weightlifting in 30 years. Esav is a man who moves. What are you talking about? He's on a constant treadmill out there in the field. Vayelech, vayikach, vayodei chazal, we're absolutely right. Three verbs, when one should have been used with a description, vayodei, vayimaher, vayodei, he hurried and he brought. Onos, kofof, bocha. Coerced, bent, and crying. Now here is something else that's very fascinating. you can let it slip through and you don't even notice it. Pasuk 12, let's go back a few psukim. Ulai yimusheni avi. What does ulai mean? Maybe, perhaps. What does the word pen mean? What's the difference between ulai and pen? And I want you to give me a classic example. L, maybe what? More what? Wait a minute. Okay. All right, we got you on the road, but in Parashat Chayei Sarah, Aaron tells Eliezer, go get a wife for my son Yitzchak. So he says twice, Ulai lo toveh ha'isha, maybe the woman won't want to come. I'm going to go all the way out there. What should I do? He says the same thing over again when he tells the whole story to the family. That my master Avram, he asked me to go find a wife for his son Yitzchak, and I told him ulai lo toveh ha'isha, maybe the woman won't want to come, won't want to follow. He said there's an old word, and of all things I heard it again. This, I think Rabbi Lyle said it in his, we said it in a shiur years ago. You know what Rashi, the second time he says that word, so Rashi says, do you know how ulai is written? Aleph, lamed, yud, without a vav between the aleph and the lamed. And you know what he really had in mind? Ulai, if she won't want to come, Eli, come to me. He had a daughter, Eli. So the Mefarshim explained that two things have to be explained. Number one, why didn't Rashi say that the first time? He says ulai, Eli k'tiv. Why only the second time? And how do they learn it from the word, you know, because it says ulai, and it could be read Eli. It means that he has a daughter. Because ulai always is the positive. If he is frightened that the woman may not want to come, he should have said, pen lo tovo, maybe she won't want to come, that's the negative. Ulai means, hey, maybe, yippee, she won't want to come. Ulai is always the positive. That's what I want should happen. Do you know what Yaakov is saying? Oy, ulai halavai musheni avi. I hope that my father touches me and he finds out that I'm Yaakov and I'll never have to go through the deceit. Do you understand how Yaakov is going about this? He wants to be found out. He wants to be caught. If he's frightened, then he should have said, me to tata like this. Pen yimusheni avi, he may. Chachmatin, it's funny, he may touch me and find out that I'm a fraud. No, he says to her, ulai, oh, if only my father will touch me and he'll find out. Do you understand how you're supposed to look at a pasuk? Does that give us the ulai and the vayelech and the vayikach and the vayove, and you'll see it further? He is a very reluctant part to this whole story. Take a look further. Vatikach rifkez big day Esav b'noh ha-gadol ha-chamudos asheri tov ha-bayit va-talbeishet Yaakov b'noh ha-katon Rivka took the clothing of her older son Esav that was with her in the house, and he
can't get dressed himself. Well, what are we talking about? This is, huh?
How old is he? He's got to be 30. No, 40. What? 60. 60. He's going to be running away right after this story. He's going to be running away. And he's going to hide 14 years by shame behavior. Until he finally is going to come to the house of love. And he's 60 years old. He can't put the coat on himself.
No, he can't put on the coat himself. He doesn't want.
She put it on his hands. He won't even pick it up from the table. She puts everything into his head.
Yet, do you understand? Are we getting a picture now of how Yaakov is going here? How Yaakov is doing all of this? All right. It is going to be one of my most frustrating ones. All right. But let's see. Those Miksav HaKabbalah that you have in front of you. I think it may very well be that it will take a few years, Gesundheit, until we get through it all. Remember, the top side is always the one that either says JCA on it or Rabbi Gold, our Gold. Yeah, that's the... chapter 27, Vayikra et Esav. You may recall that last week, I told you the Ketav HaKabbalah, we learned the Ketav HaKabbalah on Shnei Chayei Sarah, the two lives of Sarah. And I had pointed out that according to the Ketav HaKabbalah, what's most significant is the text. And there are moments at which he has a fresh look at the text. Of all things, he's going to approach this parasha from the point of view of the Medrash. And it's a fascinating Medrash, and I'm just going to stop being frustrated, and I'll just learn as much as I can with you. And I've numbered, you see how I have all the work, can you imagine, till late last night. I sat and I numbered and I numbered and then I Xeroxed. Okay, watch. Esav mechilta de Rav Shimon ben Yochai. Ha'hu zimne erev Pesach hava. Ketav HaKabbalah, chapter 20, where it said, do you see that the side with my name is the first? Chapter 27. Oh, by the way, just as an aside, I had said somebody should remind me that maybe the chapter division, which was of course Christian, and I just saw this week, it was the Archbishop of Canterbury in the 13th century that made the... I always thought it was a Catholic. It was the Archbishop of Canterbury, Stephen Sertin. I may have the name wrong, I'll get the name right. Just so that you should be able to look at the parasha, understand one extremely important part of the parasha that is cited by the Malbim. In chapter 27, first pasuk, I'm looking in the Chumash now, one of the two psukim before that, the two last psukim in chapter 26. The Malbim says that the last two psukim in chapter 26 are the whole introduction to this story. The story doesn't start chapter 27, pasuk 1. You know where the story starts? Two psukim before. Vayihi Esav ben Arboim Shana. Esav was 40 years old. And by the way, now you know already how old Yitzchak is. And you know how old Yaakov is. And not precisely, because some period of time may have elapsed between this. There can be a whole period of 20 years, I say, from one to the other. When Esav was 40 years old, Vayikach Isha, he took a wife as Yehudis Bas Be'eli Achiti, Bel Basmas Bas Elam Achiti. But Tehiyeno Moras Ruach Li Yitzchak Ulirka. They were a source, whatever you want to read into the word Morat Ruach. They were a source of aggravation. They were a source of pain. They were a source of... No, nachas. This was goyish and nachas. Chazal even tell us that these... this was before the signs, no smoking here.
the smoke of their sacrifices to the Avodah Zarah, you understand, wafted through the tent of Yitzchak and Rivka. Let me ask you, do you really think, after you read these two psukim, that you can start the parasha of the brachos and assume that Yitzchak doesn't know what Esav is? How can anybody even begin to think that the wool is being pulled over Yitzchak's eyes? A constant source of aggravation in the house. Listen, of Kein Yiddisha Mama and Tata Nishkezug. Aggravation from two daughters-in-law, from one son. I mean, that's terrible. And such aggravation. And this is aggravation that you feel every day. They're right there. You have to look at their... this is how Yehudit, of Mana, Tzuchus Gezug, this is how Yehudit, and a Basmat, you understand. And you can try and tell me that Yitzchak is old, he can't see, and he doesn't know what... Esav is the big tzaddik by him. Oh, please, you can't even begin to read the parasha that way. He knows what an Esav is. All right, then we'll have to see, sir. So why does he want to give him the brachas? Then we have to know what kind of brachas they are. Is it possible that these brachas are a last-ditch attempt? Who was it? It was Shakespeare who said that there are those who are born to greatness, there are those who rise to greatness, and there are those who have greatness thrust upon them. Is it possible that Yitzchak thinks that if he's going to place certain responsibilities on Esav, maybe he is going to save this Esav yet? He knows who. He knows that Yaakov is the tzaddik. He knows that Yaakov is going to be the father of a great people. He knows. He knows. Esav, please, please, forget the idea that Yitzchak just doesn't know. And he really thinks it's already 60 years and 20 years since he's married to these two women, and Yitzchak doesn't know. Give me a break. You can't enter the parasha that way. And the Malbim says, this is the introduction to the whole parasha. So forget, you know, grade C drushes where, what did I make up this morning about Yitzchak? That he's living in denial. You can't live in denial when you have such two daughters-in-law in the house with you. There's no denial over there. They stare you in the face all the time. The Ksava Kabbalah. At least let's do... I'm going to try and do one page out of the four. And somebody's going to have to remind me next year that we should finish the next three pages. Because what he does in each one of these pages, gems of interpretation of the words. He shows you how to read the words. And the words begin to dance before your very eyes. And you see a completely different story. At one point, for example, he says, And what happens if Yitzchak is making a mistake? And by the way, when we say that Yitzchak is making a mistake, it's not because he doesn't know Esav. He knows Esav. Is the mistake that Yitzchak is making, is it possible that Yitzchak is making a mistake because he's hoping that maybe with this last attempt of thrusting greatness upon Esav, Esav will rise to the challenge? You know, you never give up hope, but Tata doesn't give up hope. The fact is, a mama also doesn't give up hope. The only thing is that this mama raised in the house of Besuel and Lavan, she knows that sometimes, a Russia is a Russia is a Russia. Not too far from a rose is a rose is a rose, right? A Russia is a Russia. What happens if you know that somebody is making a terrible, terrible mistake? Do you have a responsibility to save them from that mistake? Or do you just sit back and say, you know, I'm not going to get involved. You know, I'm not going to get involved. I'm making a terrible mistake, so go ahead. Be my guest. Make a mistake. Don't you understand that there's one piece of information, and this is going to be a fundamental part of the shot of the Ksavah Kabbalah, there's one bit of information that she knows that Yitzchak doesn't know. She was the one at the beginning of the Sedra when she is having difficulty in her pregnancy, she's the one who goes to the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'eva. She is the one who asks what's going on. And she is told, Vayomer Hashem Lo, God said to her, there are two nations in your womb. And these two nations in your womb are going to struggle throughout all of history until ultimate victory is guaranteed to the younger one. What is she supposed to do with this information? She knows the information. I hold that she has no right to tell Yitzchak for two reasons. She has no right to tell Yitzchak. She has no right to tell Yitzchak because the pasuk clearly said at the beginning of the Seder, "Vayomer Hashem Lo," God said to her, "This is for your information." Number two, what's she going to do? She's going to go tell Yitzchak, "I have good news and I have bad news. There are twins. One of them is going to be a tzaddik who's going to create the greatest nation in history, and the other is going to be a rasha who's going to want to destroy the good son." This is what she has to tell Yitzchak. That's the good news she should tell him. And what happens if she assumes that maybe if Yitzchak doesn't know, and Yitzchak will put in all of his effort into, in some way, alright, I'm going to use the dirty word, ulai hu yachol limaze'er et hanezek. Have you heard that? Everybody and anybody is claiming they want to diminish the damage of outlaw. Netanyahu went to Vai plantation, limaze'er et hanezek. Marvel is going to remain in the government, lemazer, to make smaller. Ze'er is miniature in Aramaic. Ze'er, lemazer. Everybody's being mazer at hanezek, and they're making so much nezek. Maybe Rivka, in a positive sense, is thinking that if there's at least a relationship between Yitzchak and Esav, maybe it will diminish the damage. And by the way, come to think of it, right now Yitzchak does succeed in mazering, I created that word just now, in mazering the nezek. It's going to be in next week's Sedra. After Yaakov has taken the brachos, he's going to flee to the house of Lavan. Esav sends his son Eliphaz to go kill Uncle Yaakov, and then when he finally meets up with Uncle Yaakov ready to kill him, he holds his hands back, and Rashi says he can't do it. Why can't he do it? Because he grew up on the lap of Yitzchak. Do you understand? Because of Yitzchak's relationship with Esav and his children, Yaakov's life is going to be saved. So Rivka thinks to herself, what should I do? Should I tell him something, first of all, that I don't have the right to tell him? I don't have the right to tell him, because by Yom HaShem, look, God has said it to me. I'm going to tell him. I can't tell him. And what am I going to tell him? So I'm going to tell him that there's going to be a struggle throughout all of history between your two children, and one will want to destroy the other. So what? So therefore there won't be any relationship now between Yitzchak and Esav. Who knows what kind of damage that's going to create? I don't know how we got to that, but all right. It means that Yitzchak knows Esav. Make no mistake, he knows him well. And any attempt to paint Yitzchak as nebuch, old, senile, blind, mistake. It's not what's happening over here. But there certainly is an attempt, and I hold that it's a heroic attempt on Yitzchak's part to in some way impact on Esav. Who knows when that will be of great value and of great importance. Rivka, on the other hand, she is privy to information that Yitzchak just doesn't know. She knows that there is an eternal struggle, but she knows what the end of the struggle is going to be. Rav Yavot Soir, God told her the older one is going to serve the younger one. She knows the end of the story. Therefore, she knows, and she hasn't shared this with him, she knows, therefore, that all of the blessings and all of the good, everything belongs to Yaakov and not to Esau. So what choice does she have now? She can't, she is not going to go into Yitzchak. And by the way, on every other level, they communicate very well. There is no difficulty in communication. Don't turn Rivka and Yitzchak's relationship into a relationship where they're both patients and can use a little bit marriage counseling. Nonsense. Everything they communicate about, everything they talk about, there's only one thing she can't tell him. There's only one thing she can't tell him. She knows how ultimately the story is going to end. And she can't. Her terrible frustration is, no, by Yomar Hashem, Lord God has said this to her. And by the way, I'm ready to take the chance, and it's a risk. I think God is right. No, I think God is right. God is right. Just as Yaakov needs Rivka, Esav needs Yitzchak. Esav needs Yitzchak. There may be moments in history where it made a difference, and one of them I showed you. It may very well be that that's going to make the difference when Yaakov returns from the house of Laban. Makes a difference that it's still Yitzchak. The Tata was still Yitzchak, and the father Yitzchak has made a difference. By the way, at the end of this Sedra, what is it that Rivka hears? Rivka hears that Esav is saying, "When my father will die, when my father will die, I will kill Yaakov." Do you understand? Has the relationship made a difference? Has the relationship made a difference? Yeah. This Esav HaRasha, who feels that he has been so terribly wrong, but he will not do it in his father's lifetime. And you know what? You know what? In Arabic, I might as well use the Arabic term. Rav Avraham Shapirishli delights to use this term. In Arabic, there's a word called bukhra. Bukhra means to delay. What you can do today, don't do it today. Do it tomorrow. You never know what's going to happen. There are certain processes that the best thing about them to do is bukhra them. Just because you postpone, because you never know. You never know. By Yisrael Esav, at the end of the sentence, it says Esav hated Yaakov al habrach, about the blessing, Hashem berechu avi, by Yomei Esav belibo. Esav said, Yikrevu yimei evel avi vaharka et Yaakov achi. You see, because he has a relationship with Yitzchak, he will not be able to do it until after Yitzchak dies. Until Yitzchak dies, you understand, a lot can happen. Do you know what can happen by then? That Yaakov has turned into a mighty, formidable, familial force that is going to be able to stand up before an Esav. Alright. So you see all of the main players over here? Rivka is justified in every step that she takes. Yaakov, Yitzchak, is justified in every step he takes. The one who's caught in the middle between these two forces is Yaakov. And therefore, you know what I think Yaakov is doing? Yaakov is also buchraying. He says, Ula yimusheni yaki, I'm going to go through the whole charade, but maybe my father will touch me and he'll find out, Yaakov, what are you playing games with me? I know you're not Esau. All right, I have 6 minutes. All right, let's go. Just sit back. By Yikrat Esav, Esav and the Mechilta, that Rav Shimon Yochai says, Hahu Zimna Erev Pesach Hava. All of this is taking place on Erev Pesach. Did you know that? This is all Erev Pesach. Do you know what they're going to be preparing for Yitzchak? You know what Yitzchak wants Esav to prepare for him? The Seder. The Seder. You didn't know that, huh? That's right. Shmura Matzah and Karban Pesach. Or something may aim Karban Pesach. Watch. V'chein the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. The Targum Yonatan ben Uziel, right here on the spot, says Ba'ar Beisar ben Nissen. It was the 14th day of Nissen. Over Pirkei the Rebbe Elazar. Pirkei the Rebbe Elazar, the Medrash says the following, and here he quotes already a major part of the Medrash. Mevuar Yoter, there it's even more explained. V'hachi ita hatam, and this is what it says there. Higia leil Pesach. The night of Pesach arrived. Korah Yitzchak le'Esav, ben Argodol le'Yitzchak called his oldest son Esav, and he told him, Beni, my son, Zeho Laila, this night, Kol Ha'olo, Olam Kulo, Omnim Bo Hallel. On this night, the whole world says Hallel. And the Ketav HaKabbalah says, what does it mean? Kloma, Shatidin Yisrael Loma B'Leil Zeh Hallel Al Apsachim V'Al Anisim Sheyitzias Mitzchayim. This night, Jews are going to say Hallel over the Korban Pesach and the miracles of the Exodus from Egypt. V'otzurot Tulalim Niftachim B'Zu Halayla. The treasures of dew are opened on this night. When do we say the Tefillah for Tal? Pesach morning. During that night, dew opens up. Here in Eretz Yisrael, we all say, both Sfarad, Ashkenaz, Svaradi, I don't care where you come from, Morakai, Iraqi, Bukhari, everybody says, Morid, Atal, beginning with Pesach. Aseli matanim, ad shani ba'odi avarechecha. Make for me delightful foods that while I'm still alive I can bless you. Ruach HaKodesh Nishiva Ba'omeret, and the Holy Spirit answers and says, Al tilcham et lechem ra'ayin. It's ki'ilu, a voice is coming out of heaven and saying, Yitzchak, don't eat bread with a person who's a ra'ayin like that. Bad, evil eye. Nothing will come of it. Amar Rivka le'Yakov b'nosa, Rivka said to his son Yaakov, Halayla hazeh. You know what she tells him? This is a night of Hallel. This is a night that the treasures, the storehouses of dew open up. Those above in the heavens sing out to God. It's on this night that your children are destined to be redeemed from slavery. This night they're going to say Shira. She says, you go make the matamim for your father while he's still alive. He should bless you. He brought two goats. By the way, this one line is brought by Rashi. Rashi asks, this is what Yitzchak eats? Two goats? Elo, echot k'neged ha-Pesach ve'echot la'asos lo mat'amim le'echol. On the night of Pesach, Jews had a Korban Pesach and a Korban Chagiga, because he was supposed to eat the Korban Pesach just when you're about finished eating. So the main meal was the Korban Chagiga. The end was the Korban Pesach. The Tamin and HaPesach in Enechal El HaSov HaPesach. Pesach is eaten only when one is sated. Akkam. That's the end of the Pirkei Avos. Well, the Targum Yonason Ben Azil Omar. Targum Yonason Ben Azil, that's what I said. Now, Chad L'Shum Pischa, one was for Korban Pesach, and Chad L'Shum Korban Chava, and one was for Korban Chagiga. The Yidam. Now the Ksava Kabbalah begins to explain. It seems so distant from how I described the Ksava Kabbalah. Seems so distant. It won't be so distant. Watch. The Yidah, and it seems Lefi Shalaylo Zeh Omar HaKosov, about this night the Pasuk says, Leil Shimurim Hu. Pesach is called the night that is guarded, a night of guarding, a night of watching. Lashem Shahayah HaKodesh Baruch Hu Shomer Mitzapelo. God waited and watched for this night. Lekayem Haftachato, to fulfill his promise, Lahutziyami Mitzrayim, to take them out of Mitzrayim. Vuhu alayla, this is the night that Avram said, but he said to Avram, Balayla hazeh ani goel et banecha. God said to Avram, this night I'm going to redeem your children. Betezvav v'nissan, this you didn't know either. On the 15th of Nisan, Nigzor Gzeres Bein HaBesarim. The decree, the covenant between God and Avram, where God tells Avram that his children are going to be enslaved for 400 years and then they're going to go out to freedom, that was done on the first night of Pesach. You remember it describes over there how darkness began to descend? It's the night of Pesach. The Gezerah, the decree, is on the night of Pesach. The Tezva of the Nisan, no, like Yitzchak, this is a birthday party also. Yitzchak was born on the 15th of Nisan. How do we know that? You know how we know that? Parashat Vayera. What did Lot make for the two angels who came to him that night? Made matzahs for them. You know why he made matzahs? Because it was Pesach. And what had the Malachim said to Sarah that day? The same time next year you will have a child. To the day! Tezvav Nisan. So Tezvav Nisan is the Gzera of the Brisbane of Sodom. Tezvav Nisan is the birthday of Yitzchak. With the birthday of Yitzchak, what begins? The countdown of the 400 years that Jews are supposed to be in exile begin with Yitzchak. Umishenolad Yitzchak Niskayim Ki Ger Yezarecha, and from the time that Yitzchak is born, that's when there's the fulfillment of Ger Yezarecha, your children are going to be strangers. Umileidotay Yitzchias Mitzchayim Kolo Abba Meir Shona Hanenam Gzeres Ben Absalom. The Gzera of the Ben Absalom of 400 years ends. It begins with the birth of Yitzchak and it ends 400 years later. Lachen Hishtadel Yitzchak Biyosel Lishvar Laila Zeh. Therefore, his whole life, Yitzchak kept that night of Pesach. And this is, of course, one of the awesome, awesome things that is at the very heart of Jewish survival. The ability to celebrate July 4th, 1776, on July 3rd, 1776. The ability to celebrate Geula and redemption before it's even come. That calls for a tremendous amount of faith. The faith, can you imagine the night of Pesach? What kind of a Seder the Jews have in Mitzrayim, the night of Pesach? Pesach said, this Pesach, you know, I am eating it because in an hour or two from now, the Rebbe Shem is going to pass over our houses. This matzah that we're eating is, first of all, because of all the matzah that we ate in Mitzrayim, and as we're going to walk out in the morning, it's going to get hot, and the dough is going to bake on our shoulders. B'chol dor v'dor, what does it say? B'chol dor v'dor, chayev adam liris esatzmal. How? In a little while. In an hour or two, we're going out of its time. You understand? Celebrating the victory and the redemption before it ever happened. And Yitzchak is doing this 300 years earlier. So therefore, he kept this night. La'asot bo dugma le'pesach yotzei mitzrayim. He made his, was a real model Seder. It was a Seder that was going to be a model for what Jews were going to do later. Pesach continued, also he couldn't bring a carbon Pesach because you couldn't bring a carbon outside of the Beth HaMikdash. So now, what he's going to say further is the following. That night of Pesach, how are Jews going to go out of Mitzrayim? They're going to move with speed, and they're going to move already and prepared. You know what they're going to have? They're going to have Tzayid and Seder. Right? This I see as sort of my own addition. Why does he have to tell, in other words, really the Tzadok HaRabbah is concerned about this, why does he have to tell Esav, take your sword and your bow? I mean, he's telling him how to go hunt. And he, Yitzchak, has to tell Esav how to go hunt. No, you know what he's describing to him? He wants Esav to have the Mitzrayim experience. Jews are ready. Doesn't it say, Ubnei Yisrael Yotzim B'Yad Hamah? Jews went out with an outstretched hand. They went out with their weapons ready, if necessary, to fight. He wants to create the model of a proud and defiant Jew in this fellow Esav. There can be a lot of other relationships between the words here. If you just at the end of the last line of this page onto the next page, Hayotzei lonu mikol hadvarim ha'ela, what emerges from all of these things. And you see, this is another thing that's terribly important. You can make the mistake of thinking, it's a terrible mistake of thinking that Yitzchak, you know, needs a good meal. You can't bless anybody on an empty stomach. He needs a good meal and maybe a cigar afterwards. And then after a good meal and a cigar and maybe an aperitif and a little a chaser, hey, that's the way you give a bracha. No! The matamim are all part of a religious experience that Yitzchak has been doing for years, and now he wants to make Esav a partner in this. This is his Leil HaSeder. This is his expression of faith in the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, in the faith and the destiny of Klal Yisrael. So he says, Ki achilas ha-matarim hayu l'sivat hazman. It's not because he needs to eat. It's the time that causes it. The time that causes it. Hazman gorem achilat mitzvah. Gam hazman gorem al Yitzchak levarech es bino. It's the time. Why does he decide now to bless him? Because this is the night that all of the the storehouses and the treasure houses of doom open up in the world. You know what it means? This is a moment of chesed. This is a moment of great kindness. The Rebbeinu Shem is pouring his goodness out. And maybe, is Yitzchak possibly saying to himself, maybe in the course of all of this goodness, maybe I'll get a little bit for Esav. Maybe Esav will be moved by this whole experience of a Pesach and a Yetzias Mitzrayim and a period of chesed in the whole world. And he says that's why Mephoshim asked the question, Moshe blessed Klal Yisrael, Yaakov blessed his children, nobody had a meal. What's this meal business? You can't bless without a meal. No, this meal is a sudas mitzvah, a sudas bitachon, a sudas that represents history, a sudas that calls upon Esav to rise from the field. And even when he tells him, take all of your implements with say hasadeh, he has to tell him to go out to the field. What should he tell him to do? Take his bow and arrow and go into the den. Right? What is that? Take your bow and arrow and go out to the field. Do you know what he's creating in the mind of Esav? Klal Yisrael going out into the desert. Moving out. But the moving out becomes a religious experience, not the animalistic experience of Esav. And what does he base all of this? Alright, so he does have the Mechilta of Rav Shimon ben Yochai. He has Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. He has Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. Well, yes, the idea of take your weapons, go out into the field. But you know what he really bases it on? One thing. In the third pasuk of the parasha that we read, Va'ata sono chelecha, and now take your implements. Why did it say Va'ata? What would have happened if it wouldn't have said Va'ata? And now? Who needed it? He says that opening word is the clue to an understanding of what's happening over here. Va'ata? Different than what we have here all the time. Anybody wants to do something in this country, there will be 1,000 voices saying, Ha'itui hu lo nachon. The timing is not good. Yitzchak says, Va'ata. Now, this is the time. So what is it about the time? Why did he have to say the word Va'ata? Therefore, the Ksava Kabbalah says that word Va'ata is so heavy and so laden with meaning. Now is the time. It's a special day. This special day is something that he hopes is going to infuse Esav with some kind of a sense of history and destiny and faith and trust. Is it his last? Is it Yitzchak's last fling? Maybe it is. I said two or three times at least, I'm frustrated. Every pasuk in this parsha is so full of meaning, every word, every phrase. And when you approach this parsha, you can't do it by taking our own pseudo-psychology into it and we begin to learn all sorts of pshatim. Rivka didn't deceive. Yaakov didn't deceive. Yitzchak wasn't a never who didn't know what was happening to him. Everybody is acting out their place in history. In Mirza Shem to be continued.